weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Betta da Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It is Tuesday, August 27th, and you are listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
Oh, nice to be with you, Shane. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Rashida Adeleke will be joining us to reflect on her year so far. Niall McCoy chats Tyrone management movement, while Conan Byrne and Fergal Brennan are with us to discuss all the latest football news.
As always, if you want to get in touch, you can send us a message on 51552 WhatsApp 087 187 9200 or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Ruby Walsh, hello, hello. It's good to be back. How are you, sir?
It's good to be back. I'm great, Shane Dawson. Yourself?
I'm fantastic, I must say. I'm fantastic.
I changed that line at the top of the show as well. We're on X. The show is on X.
The show is on X. We are the show, Ruby, to be fair. And Marie Crowe and Ronan and all of the team.
I didn't look at it that way. That's a better way of putting
it.
Right.
You know, it's the collective. All right. The collective unit that is Game On. News headlines before we get into an hour of sport and try and get some more Oasis puns in without you noticing, Ruby. Athlone Town and Shelburne could meet in the Sports Direct Women's FAI Cup final for the third time in succession after the semi-final draw. So the top two teams in the Premier Division avoid each other once again. The sides have met in the 2022 and 23 deciders with one victory each. Athlone Town won last year's clash on penalties. Today's draw sees Sligo Rovers facing Athlone in a repeat of last year's semi-final. Tommy Hewitt's side have yet to win a league in the league this year, but surprised DLR Waves last week to book a place in the last four. Hewitt will come up against his former team once again in the Showgrounds. The other semi-final sees Shells host Cork City at Tolka Park. City enjoyed an improved league campaign and will travel to Dublin plotting an upset. Both sides reached this stage with winning goals in the 120th minute in the quarterfinals against Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers respectively. Great drama in Talla last night as Megan Smith Lynch's free kick went in with pretty much the last kick of the game. So those matches will be played on the week ending September 22nd. Sligo host Athlone, Cork on the road to Dublin to face Shelburne. Some Formula 1 news. Williams have replaced Logan Sargeant with Franco Colapinto for the remaining 9 rounds of this season. Sargeant's second season in Formula 1 has been cut short ahead of this weekend's Italian Grand Prix, where Colapinto will make his competitive debut, having previously driven for Williams in practice at the British Grand Prix in July. And we might pick Niall McCoy's brain on this later when he's chatting Gaelic Games, because I know you were chatting about this yesterday, Ruby. Down
we were.
GAA star Charlie Smith and his NFL dream, well, that appears to have hit a significant stumbling block as reports in America suggest that he has been released by the New Orleans Saints. So disappointing, because we did have high hopes for Charlie Smith. So reports in America still to be officially confirmed on that front. And then elsewhere, 2 million tickets have been sold ahead of the Paralympics in Paris, which is great to see. We will be previewing that tomorrow. The opening ceremony is tomorrow, and then 11 days of competitive action get underway, and we'll be keeping up to date with all of that every day it happens here on Game On. And finally, ex-IRFU chief David Nusafour has confirmed a new role with Scottish Rugby. The Scottish Rugby Union confirmed the appointment of the former Irish Rugby Performance Director Nusafour in a new advisory role. So good mail for Scottish Rugby. Ruby, I know you keep abreast
of it. I wouldn't say a bad one, but you will see if Scotland improve or disimprove the benefit of David Nusafour.
Results indeed. Let us move on to our football chat. And Conan Byrne and Fergal Brennan are both on the line with us this evening. We will be previewing Pats in Europe in due course. We might hear from Damien Duff, Rory Higgins and Stephen Bradley after their respective matches over the weekend as well, with the League of Ireland chatting. We'll get Conan's thoughts on the Cup draw, the Women's FAI Cup draw. However, there is plenty of news in England, a lot of it featuring Irish players and transfer news. Fergal Brennan, if I come to you first, where would you like to start? What's been happening for Irish players over in England in terms of transfers, Fergal?
Well, I think the big attention in the next couple of days before the transfer window closes on the 30th is going to be on Ipswich Town. Sammy Smodic's obviously already joined, got himself a goal at the weekend. Ultimately, defeat for Ipswich away at Manchester City, but I think you probably let them off on that one. It's been a tough opening fortnight for them. Gareth O'Shea has joined as well. And there's a big story emerging that Chidozie Ogbene is being looked at by Kieran McKenna and his team. They want to add some pace out wide and some attacking threat that they've probably lacked in those first two games. I know, as I say, it's difficult to take too much when you come up against the defending champions and a revived Liverpool team. Ogbeni would be one for me personally that I would love to see back in the Premier League. I think it'd be fully deserved. Luton getting relegated last year wasn't through any want of his performances or efforts. For me, he is a Premier League level player. He's got all the assets that you would want in a team that is probably going to be fighting relegation or in the bottom half of the table, Ipswich Town, can create chances. He's very quick. He's positionally very adaptable as well. So that's something to keep an eye on in the next few days. There's no current noise on Quivín Kelleher from Liverpool. Georgi Maragashvili, I'll get that one right, is almost done in terms of moving to Liverpool. That will mean that there's a decision to be made for Kelleher in the next couple of days. At the moment, there's not really anything other than just the usual gossip. There's links with Brentford and with Wolves. The Wolves one is a little bit stronger because there's concerns over Jose Sarr, who's not had a great start to the season. Mark Flecken is fairly well in position at Brentford. So Wolves would be the hunch at the moment. But if he couldn't go into the season being second choice, he definitely can't go into it being third choice. So that's probably the kind of the exciting one to keep an eye out before the window shuts. But Ogbeni to Ipswich would certainly be one that would catch the eye as well.
Yeah, big decision for Quivín Kelleher to make. Conan, what about Jake O'Brien? Could make his Everton debut tonight in the Carabao Cup versus Doncaster. Thoughts he walked into at Everton?
Gee, bit of a nightmare, really, being honest. I was on Saturday Sport with Des and Marie on Saturday, and we were expecting them to be on the team sheet to start at 11, considering the opening day defeat to Brighton. And when word came through that he wasn't starting, I think there was we were hoping that it was going to be the scoreline that it did end up, in the hope that he would get some game time this week. And yeah, I think he's going to get his start against Doncaster tonight. Hopefully he does well enough to earn a first Premier League start, because he did do well in pre-season since he's come in. He got a couple of goals. More importantly, his defensive displays were good. But it's just in terms of Everton themselves, their defensive back line, and even in the six, I know there's talk about Oyel Mangala coming back into the Premier League. He only joined Lyon last month from Nottingham Forest, but there's talk of him going back to Goodison Park and back to the Premier League. So that'll be an interesting one going forward. But for Jake O'Brien, yeah, he needs game time. Hopefully he'll put in a good performance tonight against Doncaster that will put him in line for the first Premier League start at the weekend.
Fergal, I believe you're going to that match tonight. What are you expecting?
I'm expecting the same. Hopefully Jake O'Brien starts. I'm going not as a journalist. I got a free ticket to go in there to stand in the rain to watch Everton tonight. And hopefully a change, because it's been a really difficult start for them this season. Back-to-back defeats. Obviously, the performance against Tottenham was really poor. The video that's been circulating on social media of fans in Euston Station giving the players a piece of their mind has kind of split opinion. This idea that, you know, fans are obviously right to be frustrated, particularly the money and the commitment that they put towards their team. But obviously, you've got players who will be disappointed themselves in their performance and their result, just trying to get home. So I think tonight, despite the fact on the face of it should be a banker, given the gap between the two teams and the fact that Everton are a Premier League team. But the issue obviously going against is that Sean Dyche traditionally is not a big fan of the Carabao Cup, and teams that are in the bottom half of the table are not a big fan of it either, because the Premier League is the bread and butter and the focus. Given how bad they've been this season, nothing but a win and a bit of a positive performance will do. But ultimately, that has to transfer into Premier League form. So you would expect a win and a pretty routine one, because the fans are angry. And there is a sense of justification in that. But Everton have got previous in these types of situations that it can become toxic very, very quickly. And that can be very difficult to turn around.
How loud is that toxic element? And what's the general feeling from Everton fans on Sean Dyche and the Everton management at the moment, Fergal?
Again, I think there's a bit of a split in the sense that the element of realism that they're probably going to be in a relegation battle or just above it means that someone like Sean Dyche is a very, very strong candidate. He does have a very good record of keeping teams out of relegation, making them difficult to beat, making them kind of just have enough to keep their heads above water and then push on. I think the fans, somewhat naively but also somewhat justifiably again, would have expected a bit more looking at last season. They survived. They got past the issue of the points deductions. They brought in some interesting players, Lindstrom and Dye, to add a bit more dynamism and a bit more creativity going forward. And the season could not have started worse. So I think there's faith in the idea that if it's going to be a repeat, for want of a better word, of last season, then yeah, Sean Dyche is the best person in that situation because he knows how to just kind of batten down the hatches and get things done. But Everton want more. They're moving to a new stadium next year. They want to be in a position to be pushing up the table, pushing into mid-table. They know they're not going to be a top four, top six side overnight, and they know that even the potential of that is a long way away, but they want to see some form of progress. And whilst that might sound a bit low ball, kind of going from 16th to 12th, that is tangible progress. You look at, you know, kind of Brighton, Crystal Palace, they are absolutely set in stone as Premier League teams. Everton, despite the fact that they are good at getting out of relegation battles, every season the fans do get put through the ringer. And I think that's the issue. They were positive that there might be a bit of a change this summer, and the evidence so far just isn't backing that up.
I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, but Conan, just briefly, with your player hat on, and just on that video that Fergal referenced of the players getting a bit of an earful from Everton fans, if you're Jake O'Brien, are you thinking, good Lord, get me on a train back to Lyon here?
Well, he got a Lyon last season, if we remember, when he was at the start of last season, yeah. when Lyon were really struggling, and they had to face the bombardment of the Lyon fans after a particular game. I can't remember who it was against, and they just faced the ultras and just had to take it in. So he's no stranger to this type of environment, I suppose. But as a player had on, he hasn't been part of these two games on the starting 11. So he'll be itching to get onto a pitch tonight, show the fans what he's capable of, and hopefully start that game against Bournemouth on Saturday.
Fergal, does it look like Manchester United and Chelsea are having a chit-chat about Sancho and Sterling? Is there a possibility of a swap deal there?
I think this is kind of elevated from just gossip to the potential, that everyone's putting a little note by it as we move towards the deadline. As a move, you'd look at it and say there's a bit of benefit on both ends. For me, Raheem Sterling, still a Premier League level player. I think he's been treated poorly by Chelsea. Some of the angles that he's put on it maybe hasn't helped fan perception of him or public perception of him, but he's still a player that produces at Premier League level. He might not be quite the player that he was at Manchester City, but he's still somebody with lots of experience, gets goals, creates chances in and around the box, which is something that Manchester United are seriously lacking. Jadon Sancho is still a very talented player. I don't really think any United fan believed that the kiss and make up with Erik ten Hag over the summer was going to last, and that's already been borne true in the first two games of the season, and Erik ten Hag has given vague answers about why he's not involved, and the writing looks to be on the wall in that sense, that even if he doesn't get moved out of the club on loan or even permanently, he's not part of Erik ten Hag's plans. We said at the start of the summer that Jadon Sancho was probably, like the rest of us, anticipating that Erik ten Hag would be sacked from United. That hasn't happened. His future realistically hasn't changed. In terms of the move to Chelsea, there's a lot of moving pieces still going on. They have got rid of a couple of players this week. They probably still need to get rid of two or three before the deadline closes, before they can start moving players in. The wages, I'm led to believe, there's not an enormous difference, so that wouldn't necessarily upset the financial balance in terms of what Sterling's on and what Sancho's on, and a relatively similar package. But if I was looking at the face of it, I would say in theory United are getting the better end of that deal. Whether we could see a situation where Sterling has played for Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea and Manchester United, I think that's a big ask. But it could well happen, because he has no place at Chelsea. Enzo Maresca has been very clear about that.
He certainly has. What about Manchester United buying Manuel Ugarte then, Conan? 50 million from PSG. Obviously, he's part of that Uruguayan side that played at the Copa de America.
Absolutely, yeah. He's a fantastic player. And as Fergal said, United are in a bit of a position here where they've signed four major players this transfer window, with Joshua Zirkzee, De Ligt, Mazzarello, and Lenny Yoro. So this is, obviously Yoro got injured, and this will be their fifth major signing, and it'll be a big ask for him to come into this Manchester United team. Obviously McTominay looks like he's heading out the door to Napoli, which I believe is a bit of a mistake for Manchester United, being an academy graduate. Manchester United fell through and through, didn't want to leave the club, so he's nearly on the way out. It's only his exit terms he has to sort out, as he hasn't asked to leave. Everything else has been finalised, and Napoli are getting a bargain for him. But with regards, as you say, Napoli are Uruguayan international, PSG are delighted with this deal. They've recuperated the money they spent on him last year from Sporting Lisbon. And he led French football in tackles last season with 98 of them, and despite only starting just 21 games. And with PSG and the midfielders that they have, obviously signing João Gomes from Benfica this summer, I don't think Manuel Ugarte would have got the game time that he would have liked. But heading into that Manchester United team, they need somebody in that middle of the park that will break up play. With the tackles that he's able to do in that midfield position, I think he's going to be a very good signing for Manchester United. But I do still think that Scott McTominay should have been kept as well.
Yeah, it is frustrating when you see academy graduates go, Conan. I wholeheartedly agree. Fergal, for Arsenal, the BBC are reporting that Wolves' move for Aaron Ramsdale is off. However, Arsenal themselves have completed the signing of Spain midfielder Mikel Merino from Real Sociedad for a fee that could reach over £30 million. What does he bring to Arsenal, Fergal?
I think he fills a hole that was bit of an issue for Mikel Arteta last year. You think of that right side of that Arsenal team, it picks itself. Ben White, Martin Odegaard and Bukayo Saka. There was a lot of changes through that left-hand side of the team. Alexander Zinchenko would be generally the first choice left-back. Now there's a decision to make with Julian Timber back fit. They've obviously brought in Riccardo Calafiori, who can play at centre-back or at left-back. That left-sided number eight, I think, is going to be where Merino will slot in, and we'll see Declan Rice move to a kind of sole holding role. I still think Arteta's not completely sure where he wants to put Declan Rice, whether he wants him as a six or a left-sided number eight. But Merino kind of makes that decision for him. And I think he's a different type of player. There's obviously been comparisons with Martin Zubimendi, who initially was linked with Arsenal and then with Liverpool, of course. He's more of a box-to-box midfielder. And I think it's part of this kind of arms race between Guardiola and Arteta, with this idea of having physical, tactically astute players in the middle of the pitch. We saw it with City a lot last year, where they would play defensively minded players right the way through the middle of the pitch to occupy space, to win 50-50s and move forward and then get the ball to the creative players. Mikel Merino does that very well. He's very athletic, he's tall, he's powerful, he can break into the box, score goals. We saw that in the Euros, the winner that he got against Germany to put Spain obviously on course to then go on and win it. So that's the type of player that he is. He's not a Martin Odegaard in a very creative and kind of possession retention sense, but he's someone that will break forward and give midfields a bit of a question to answer, and defences as well, because if you're in a position as a centre-back and you see this guy breaking forward, do you step out and try and challenge him when you've got Kai Havertz or Martinelli running in behind, or do you stay? So I think that will be what Arteta will be hoping that he adds. And it is very interesting, this idea of him and Guardiola trying to match each other. We're seeing a real move away from how Guardiola used to operate two or three seasons ago. And Arteta himself still finding his way right at the very, very top level as a manager. Merino will now give them something different in that midfield role, because Declan Rice, I don't quite think he has the goal threat that a Merino has. And I think ultimately Arsenal wanted Declan Rice when he bought him to play in that holding role. And now Arteta wants to give him a full season there to see if that was the correct call to be made.
Conan, speaking of Spanish football, Real Madrid won 3-0 at the weekend, but Kylian Mbappe in his second league game didn't score. Ancelotti says he's not too worried. That said, he played three games. He's never failed to score in the opening three games of PSG. If he doesn't score against La Palma on Thursday, is he going to be feeling a bit of pressure?
Of course he will. And him being a player himself, and the goal scorer, the threat that he has, he'd want to show those Real Madrid fans of what he's capable of and score. I'm surprised he hasn't already. He was taken off, obviously, in the game as well, 5-6 minutes to go. He ended up getting a third after he went off. So I tell you, he was sick and sitting on the bench, seeing that third goal go in, considering it could have been himself. But yeah, look, with Mbappe, he's going to score goals. There's no doubt about it. With the players that they have around him, there's no doubt Rodrigo has been in flying form. Vinny Jr., obviously, Jude Bellingham, like, they're going to make chances for him, and it's just a matter of time before that does happen. So I'd be similar thinking with Carlo Ancelotti. The goals will come, because there's no better player in world football than Kylian Mbappe going through and putting the ball in the back of the net. So that will happen for sure.
That is for sure. Elsewhere in Spain, Barcelona beat Athletic Club de Bilbao, I should say, in the Nico Williams derby. But Fergal, before we let you go and move on to our League of Ireland conversation with Conan, what has caught your eye both in Serie A and in the Bundesliga?
Well, I think big change for Juventus in terms of the start of the season. Thiago Motta coming in, back-to-back 3-0 wins, they're top of the league. There's still issues to be solved, and I think transfers will be a big feature in the next few days. Liverpool interested in Federico Chiesa, and Juventus need to sell players before the window shuts. They're not quite the Chelsea of Italy, but they do have their problems. But on the pitch, it's been a really strong start, and their fans will be demanding that they put it up to the two Milan clubs in terms of a title race. Very, very long way to go, but strong opening signs. As for the Bundesliga, Xabi Alonso, it's like he's never been away. 3-2 win at the weekend. Florian Wirtz scoring in the 11th minute of added time to kind of extend the Leverkusen tag that he's got there. It's going to be fascinating for them this season because everybody expects Bayern Munich to come strong and kind of wrestle it back off them, but they will not let it go without a fight. Xabi Alonso has stayed. He's obviously nailed his colours to the mast. Certainly for this season, they've managed to keep their top players so far, Wirtz being one of them. It's going to be very, very interesting how Bayern Munich manage that because Vincent Kompany is massively unproven. Regardless of the talent that Bayern Munich have, this idea that it will be automatic for Munich to just step back in and kind of brush Leverkusen aside, I really, really don't think it's going to be the case.
Well, Fergal, Lothar Matthäus was fairly scathing of Thomas Tuchel. He said Bayern Munich were not a family when he was there. It was a one-man show.
I just think it's a situation where Bayern Munich have been just dominant in German football for so long, and Alonso has brought a real freshness. When Dortmund or other teams have challenged them in the past, it's been quite fleeting, and when it's really come to the crunch, particularly when they've played against Munich, they just kind of seem to wilt. Alonso is the key in all of this, and he's changed that, and I think Munich themselves will be looking at that and saying, we don't have that. We don't have that level of fear factor that we did in the past. And that comment that you just said there with Matthäus and Thomas Tuchel, that just shows this idea of a bit of discontent. It's been an elite level club. They're used to winning. They don't like slipping off their perch. But Alonso just keeps passing every test that gets put in front of him. And that is obviously irking Bayern Munich, Matthäus and the fan base for Bayern Munich as well.
Okay, good stuff, Fergal Brennan. Thank you, as always. Great chatting. Conan, you're staying on the line because we're going to hear it now from Damien Duff, Rory Higgins and Stephen Bradley after their respective matches last weekend. Frustration for Shells and for Rovers, a victory for Derry. I'm going to get Conan's thoughts on the League of Ireland title race after hearing from the three managers.
Yeah, here, being brutally honest, I don't think we did, neither team did enough to win the game. So here, we won't know till the end of the season. It could be a big point or it could be two dropped.
And did it feel like two drops, especially with Derry's results in Waterford?
Of course, here against anyone. We back ourselves to beat anyone at home. So, of course, I'm going to err towards that. 2 points dropped. Listen, here, everything is still in our hands. We have a game in hand. Granted, a very difficult game. I never took this game for granted tonight. Bows, on a very poor run, but they've got so much quality in the team. The guys are obviously slightly disappointed upstairs. We'll bounce into next week. Strange enough, we looked a bit leggy as a team and individually in the second half. And the game, strangely, it's called a spade, you're going for a league title and, the game kind of petered out, which is strange. But, listen, like I said, we won't know till the end of the season whether it's a big point or two dropped.
We'll take a wee bit of fortune when we get it. We haven't got many goals like that, but we'll take it and move on. But as I said, really proud of the commitment of the players, and we showed a couple of different sides to us tonight. And we go back up the road on a 5.5-hour journey with 3 points in the bag.
And of course, you must also be very pleased that you've now at the top of the Airtricity Premier Division.
Aye, well, if we're talking about that in 8 games time, then I'll be a happy man, but we'll not get carried away. We'll enjoy the victory tonight and, as I say, get back up the road.
We're disappointed with the goal we give away. We've got clean possession and we give away a silly pass in the field and they punish us. So like I said, some of us good, some of it can be better, and on another note, we maybe take one of our other chances from the corners.
So 10 points the gap now. You still have a couple of games in hand. I assume you're not throwing the towel in at this stage.
Oh, no chance. No, there's a long way to go. We just need to stay focused on us, stay focused on what we do, keep showing up, and we'll see where it takes us come the end of the season.
Now, we will be talking plenty about the League of Ireland title race between now and November, Conan. I do want to get your thoughts on Pats in Europe, but just briefly, one kind of follow-up question on it. In your expert opinion, who's in the driving seat at the moment for the title, Conan?
Shane, that's the million-dollar question. I actually couldn't tell you. You're looking at the form table at the moment. Sligo Rovers are the form team, having won 3 out of the last 5 games, but then get beaten 7-0 by bottom of the table Drogheda. That lifts them off the bottom, who are on a bit of a run themselves. So it's mad, this league. It really is. I've never seen anything like it in all the years that I played in the league. I never played in a league like this. So it's whoever I think has the confidence just and the experience to go on and just do it, you know. And with Shells, they don't have that experience that I feel they'd need, I suppose. I've kind of called this for a while now that this has happened. Now, I did think Shamrock Rovers would win their last 2 home games against Drogheda and Galway. They haven't. They drew through both games one apiece. And if they had have won those games, they'd and won their games in hand, they'd be level on points at the top of the league. So it's an incredible situation that we're in. It's great for the neutral. I'm sure that the fans of these clubs are just dying for a bit of a run, because whoever grabs that like 3-4 game winning streak that I'm sure one of them will get, it'll probably push them over the line. If you're asking me to call it, I suppose Derry City, considering they've been in and around that top end of the season over the last number of years. But with Shamrock Rovers 10 points off it, you can't rule them out considering they're going for that 5 in a row. Only thing that I would take is the fact that of the European football that they have and that they're going to be in there for the foreseeable up until January anyway. So that might distract them a little bit from the league.
Conan Shane Dawson has just sunk back in his chair here in the studio at the fact that you think Shells are not going to do it.
Yeah, I just think it's a little bit too, like, they haven't won a game in 4 games, drawn 3, lost 1. And just with the experience, the lack of experience I think that they have in their team, I never expected them to get over the line, even though they perform so well. I think that, like, obviously the goal is to win the league, but even for Shells to be back in Europe next season would be hugely successful if you're looking at that from the start of the campaign, to be back in Europe and bring those glory nights back to Tolka Park on European nights. Now, if they do get it over the line, it'll be probably the greatest achievement the League of Ireland has probably seen in a very long time.
Mm. Speaking of big European nights, Paul Corey will be in studio tomorrow, keeping eyes on the big match tomorrow. But Conan, what are your thoughts on Pats in Turkey? They've frustrated them somewhat in Tala. Can they do the same, although it's going to be a different beast than Istanbul?
Of course it is. They just need to keep it tight for as long as possible and frustrate the life out of Istanbul, Basaksehir. It was kind of similar story over in back in 2014 when we played Legia Warsaw in the Champions League. We got an early goal, 1-0 up, and the home crowd just threw the white flags. They got against their team, and we just managed to hold out, and it was an unbelievable performance. So I think if they were able to do something like that tomorrow in terms of perhaps not even score a goal, but just hold them at bay for as long as possible and frustrate the fans, because if you can frustrate the fans, it drips out onto the football pitch, and the Turkish players then will be in a position, will make wrong decisions on the ball, and you could get that counter attack where Pats are strong, especially down down the flanks with Zach Eldezedi and Jake Mulroney. They've been in flying form in Europe over the last number of games. So look, you never know. I do think if they score early, though, it could be a similar performance to Pauk Shamrock Rovers last week, where it ended 4-0. I'd like to think it's not going to be like that, but hold out for as long as possible and you never know.
Yeah, you'd like to think it's not going to be like that. Do you have hope? Do you have hope that Pats could pull off one of the biggest achievements that a League of Ireland club has done in becoming just the third club to reach a group stages of European competition?
Yeah, it probably would be. It'd be one of the biggest achievements. Like, I know Dundalk did it against Pate Borisov, and obviously Shamrock Rovers did it a couple of times as well over the last number of seasons. But I think if Pats were to do this, to go through 3 rounds unbeaten, because that's what they'll need to do, it's something that we've never seen before in the League of Ireland. And to go to Turkey against a huge team that won the Turkish League only a couple of years ago, It's a huge feat with the players, the money, everything. It'll be huge. Do I have hope? Not really. But look, we can all dream.
We can certainly all dream. Okay, we will leave it there. Conan Byrne, thank you so much as always. As I mentioned, Paul Corrie will be in studio. We'll be keeping you up to date with that match tomorrow. We are taking a very short ad break, but then we are going to hear from Rashida Adeleke. Myself and Ruby were speaking to, well, I was going to say the Irish legend. She's only in her early 20s, but you know what? She is already nearly an Irish legend after the performances today, and it is only going to get better. So do stay tuned for a chat with Rashida Adeleke.
Game on. Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
Now, I'm delighted to say Irish Olympian and Allianz Ambassador Rashida Adeleke joins us after making history in Paris this summer, becoming the first Irish woman to reach an Olympic sprint final. And with thanks to Allianz Global and local partners of the Olympic movement, who, of course, recently announced a renewal of their partnership with the OFI last month, Rashida joins us here on Game On. Rashida, first and foremost, how are you? How's the body after competing in the Olympics and the small matter of a Diamond League meeting as well?
No, I'm good. Thank you so much. No, I'm good. Just trying to get back to the schedule and reset.
I can imagine. Have you had a moment to, before we talk tactics and race tactics and how it kind of played out, to just actually sit down, exhale and just soak it all in and reflect?
Kind of. But honestly, I feel like I just wanted to move past it, if anything. I think I just wanted to move on to the next thing and just try to keep being competitive. And, like, I'm really, really also looking forward to next season as well, because each time that I do something and I try something new, I'm like, okay, this doesn't work, this does work. So it gives me so much motivation to know what I'm going to change, what I'm going to do going forward. So, no, yeah, I did get the time to, like, get a little breather, you know, look and reflect on what happened. But like now I'm excited for the future and just looking forward.
So is that your mentality? The past can't be changed. The future can only be affected. And that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. So at this point, you know, I've done my stopping. I've done my, you know, looking, my reflecting. And, you know, I'm just very focused on the future, laser focused, just knowing what I need to change, we'll know what I can do. And I've had this chat with my coach as well. And yeah, I think the future is bright.
So when you say you've done your reflecting, are you the kind of person that can pull up after they cross the line and think, oh, should have, could have, would have, or do you have to go and watch it to see what you need to change?
No, I'd know crossing the line, like what I could have, should have and done. But like sometimes it's like, that's all you had anyway. So in the moment, if I was put in that situation again, there'd be a high likelihood that I'd probably do the exact same thing again. And like, or even if I did change it, that might not have even changed the outcome. So it's more so about just moving past it and knowing what I can do in the future to be better. And sometimes that's going to take a long time. Like it's more like long term and instead of short term. Like maybe what I do in 2 weeks might not even change anything, but what I do in 2-3 months will. So it's about more so the long term effect, I guess.
You're so young. So how hard is it to, that's a very oldish person statement or an experienced person statement, to think that it's so long term. How can you see that at such a young age, to know that that progression is going to take time, a long time? How come you're so mature? How can you see that?
I guess I have no choice but to see it that way. Otherwise, I'd probably like go crazy trying to think back on what I could have, should have done, or like what I can do in the next 2 weeks to become a global superstar. So I have to adapt that mentality and able to pretty much stay sane and stay true to the process, because I know when people would always be like, oh, you're so much younger than them and you have so much more experience to do. I know what I'm capable of now, but I also recognize that I do have a lot of developing to do and experience to be gained. So I understand that it's going to take time to achieve those things. And even though now there's people who might be 21 or 22 or 20 achieving their goals and, you know, becoming Olympic champions, so it's possible, but it's just not everyone has the same route, and it might take me a little bit longer, and that's okay as long as I get there eventually.
You mentioned trying to
stay sane and process it all. Is that more difficult, having patients giving the extra attention now that you kind of have the somewhat block out as well?
Yeah, and I think I've somewhat like set a standard. So that can be a good thing, but can also be a hard thing to work with, because people are going to have a certain expectation of me and my performance. So when I don't perform to my best abilities, or, you know, sometimes just have a bad day in the office, some people obviously are going to develop their own opinions. So sometimes you cross the line and you're like, oh, that was not good. Like, and it's just important to just move past it and not be too fazed about what people are going to think, because they don't know what happens behind the scenes. Nobody knows what happened before the race. Nobody knows what happened at training. Nobody knows if you were sick, if you had other issues that you've been dealing with. They only see what happens on the track. So that's why I feel like it's really important to be patient and to just keep going regardless, because people are going to say what they want to say, but it's about how I deal with it and how I move forward, essentially.
In a roundabout way, you're saying everybody's human.
Yeah, pretty much. Everyone is human. Everyone has their own things that they deal with. And at the end of the day, like, I'm obviously an athlete and I've achieved everything that I have achieved. But, you know, I go through my own things as well. And I'm just literally experiencing things for the first time. And each day I'm getting better, and I'm going to be able to apply the things I learn to how I make decisions and what I do in the future. So,
are you enjoying it?
I am. You know, there's times I enjoy it more than others, definitely. And there's times where I'm not having so much fun. But the whole process and the whole, I guess, experience of being an athlete, this is just what it is. And I really wouldn't have it any other way, because I love what I do. And that's pretty much what keeps me going, because I really wouldn't want to be doing anything else at this moment. So, yeah.
What's the biggest obstacle you've had to overcome in terms of learning curves now, when you do look at the foreseeable future of your career?
I think experience is a big thing. So I've experienced a lot this year. We changed a lot of things with my coach, and we're trying to see what works and what doesn't work. So I think that's going to be a big indicator in what we're going to do in the future. And honestly, as I said, like, I'm new to this at the same time, this 400 meter, just being a professional athlete, the traveling, there's just so many new things that I've yet to figure out exactly how I'm going to take going forward. But I'm just it's a whole learning process. So each year I'm getting better physically and mentally, and knowing how to deal with certain situations. So I think that's just part of the game. And in the future, I'll be able to make, like, well-calculated decisions based on these things.
So every day is a school day, essentially. What have you done that you wouldn't do again? Be it traveling, be it diet, be it training. What have you learned that you thought, definitely not doing that again?
Oh, probably... what have I done this year that I wouldn't do again? I probably would take more time to do the experimenting earlier on. I feel like with this season, I opened my season in the 400 really late, and we were doing I was trying to do everything this year. I was trying to do the 1, 2, the 60, the 4, and do it all. I think other things, like, it's good to maybe focus on certain things and make sure that it's right for the plan. And that's like what me and my coach were talking about too. And I also would probably go easier on myself, like, mentally too, and not get too, like, beat myself up too much, because that definitely doesn't help, and move past it and just keep working hard regardless of the circumstances. Another thing would be those probably be the main things, honestly. I feel like everything else that I changed was for the better. Like, I definitely got on top of a lot of things I wasn't really on top of in college, like my nutrition, my hydration, my sleep, and all the external factors when it comes to performance. So I wouldn't really change any of those. I definitely did nail those down pretty well this year. And if anything, I just improved those.
just a slightly different schedule, a different way of going about it. But you say not being hard on yourself. The disappointment teach you that you're being too hard on yourself?
Sometimes. Like, I think the way I'm wired as a person, I'm always going to be disappointed with a bad performance, but not letting that kind of overtake me in certain scenarios. There's a lot of times where I'll probably dwell on it too long and I'll let it mess with my head a bit. And I probably will try to have a different outlook in the future. And I think that's also coming from college. Like, I was so used to, you know, winning and like doing really well in college. This is a whole different realm. So I brought that college mentality to the professional world, which is, it's different in the professional world. Like, it's usually someone different wins all the time. And especially when you're in different events, like, it's, you need to move on really quickly and change things and decide what you want to change and make it better for next time.
You've still won Diamond League meeting left in Brussels in the 13th of September now. So what, I suppose, are the goals that you'd be looking to hit?
I'm going to meet with my coach today, and it's just to keep going forward, to try and put a better performance every time I step on the track. And, you know, it's just about, at this point of the season, just going out there, being healthy, and just putting on a good show, and that's hopefully what we're going to do.
And just, I know you don't reflect as well, but it was just, it occurred to me when you're talking about kind of the learnings and that mental fatigue that athletes can also suffer as well. A lot of Irish fans looking on, and it's very topical, it's in the news, with the sanctions imposed on Bahrain in particular. And listen, like, Thomas Barr has spoken out about it. Sarah Lavin has said that the timing of the announcement was sickening, that they've banned athletes for 12 months but allowing them to bring 10 athletes to the Paris Olympics. Like, when you look at that, I know you concentrate on your own performances and yourself solely, but is enough being done by the Athletics Integrity Unit, in your opinion?
I definitely think if the consequences were raised in anything pertaining to a doping violation, people would definitely rethink their decisions when it came to even considering missing tests. Or, I don't know, missing tests, you can definitely miss tests by accident, but bans pertaining missing 3 tests or doping or voluntarily and intentionally, people would definitely change their mind regarding those situations. Because if you had more lifelong consequences and, you know, penalties that would really, really affect you as a person and not just result in you missing out on competing for 3 years, which some people would see as a sustainable risk to take, I think that would definitely change a lot of people's minds if they were ever considering to break any of the rules regarding doping. So harsher sanctions would work pretty well, probably.
Yeah. Is it a personal frustration? Because I know from even chatting to people who were over in Paris supporting you and watching on, athletics fans throughout the years, considering Aidan Nasir was in your race as well and you finished fourth, does it highlight the fact a bit more for you on a personal level?
Not really, honestly. I don't really read into all of those things because I don't know what people do in their own time. And if they haven't been like convicted of actually... Not convicted, but they haven't been proven to actually have done anything wrong. I can't do anything about that. I have no say in what happens. Everybody's going to do what they want to do at the end of the day. And I just have to focus on myself because I can control what somebody decides to do or put in their body. And, you know, as of now, everybody in that final was clean. So I just have to take what it is. But of course, you never know what's going to happen in the future. But as of now, that's just how it is, and I'm just going to roll with that.
That milk is spilled and can't be put back in the bottle. So moving swiftly on, you run on the 13th of September in Brussels. What about downtime? What is the recuperation, your mind, your body? How long are you going to take off?
After the season? Probably like 4 weeks, maybe.
A whole 4 weeks. You're treating yourself, aren't you?
Oh, it's insane. I won't know what to do with myself. But yeah, I guess I also have to talk to my coach about that, because it depends on what he wants. Because next season is going to be really long, because Worlds isn't until the end of September. So he might have a different take on that on our off-season break because of that prolonged season next year. But hopefully I'll be able to go somewhere nice and sit on a beach and reset.
And so you're looking forward to it. Could you see your season starting in the indoor circuit and building through the Diamond Leagues, heading for the Worlds? Would that be a...
Yeah, I did a couple of indoor races this year. He might have a different approach. My coach might have a different approach next year. But yeah, we haven't really spoke about 2025 yet. So that's definitely all to be planned soon, maybe closer to the season starting.
Closing to the season. Sounds like a plan anyway. We'll all be waiting for the World Championships in Tokyo in September anyway. Whatever else you decide to do in the middle, that is when we'll all be waiting to see what's happened.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we are most certainly looking forward to seeing you back in action, Rashida. Thanks so much again for joining us, with thanks to Allianz. And I know I can speak on behalf of Ruby, so we wish you all the very best going forward.
Thank you so much.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. So Evan Ferguson even has been named on the bench tonight for Brighton in their Carabao Cup clash with Crawley Town, and Seamus Coleman will start for Everton in their game against Doncaster. He's going to captain Everton actually in their game against Doncaster
and a debut for Jacob Ryan. So it's all coming up. It is brilliant.
Jacob Ryan. We expected that. We talked about that 20 minutes, half an hour.
Yeah, we're just confirming it, isn't it great? I'm big enough. We're excited. Of course we're happy. It's all good news for Irish stars.
Into other news. Yesterday's news was Colin O'Rourke departing from Meath. Today, Brian Duher and Fergal Logan have taken the exit door in Tyrone. Niall McCoy joins us on the line. A surprise, or was it expected?
Not too sure, Ruby. I think probably slightly expected. There'd been a feeling that there might be a change coming since the season ended. The Roscommon result was obviously... It was a tough one to take, especially in front of their own fans. And it just felt that maybe that there might be a change on the way, even though there was a couple of years left on their term. But it's a strange one. It's a strange one because they had four seasons, and their body of work, if you look at it from a distance, is really impressive. Kept them up in Division 1 the whole time, even though there's been a bit of transition. Won in All-Ireland, obviously, in their first season. So... you flip that around and they're winning the All-Ireland this season, you know, no one's talking about a change or anything like that, but probably expected overall.
The body of work is massive. Obviously, they won the All-Ireland in 2021. That was the knockout year, I think, before the current system that we have right now. But there's been a huge transition in players as well. What way do they leave Tyrone football?
It's hard to actually surmise because... there's so much excitement about the two under-21 teams. There's two under-20 teams that won All-Ireland. You know, they've two All-Ireland under-20 titles in the last 3 years. They've got OMA, CBS have won back-to-back Hogan Cups, you know, absolutely destroying the opposition. They scored 9-30 in their two finals. So it probably felt like they're in that wee sort of zone now, and that team were the transition, and maybe it might be the best for them that a new voice gets them and gets that new blood in and takes them on to that next level. You know, the other thing about Duher and Logan, they were unlucky at times too, to injuries to key players. Matty Donnelly, who we saw how good he was this year again, like, he picked up a serious injury. Cal McShane, who was so influential on that All-Ireland year, had his injury problem. So a wee bits and pieces went against him along the way too, but Tyrone fans, maybe just a fresh voice taking in those young teams, might just spark something in them again, because they have lost something. Like, since that All-Ireland win, it's been pretty meek performances. They went out the next season and lost Armagh, and it was very one-sided. The next year, Kerry beat them, where the Westmeath should have put them out in the group. And then, as I mentioned, that Roscommon victory or defeat, and it's just sort of lost a wee bit of momentum, Tyrone. And the thing about Tyrone football, the other thing that's very noteworthy about Tyrone, they've lost... the fans were so vital to Tyrone all down through the years, so passionate, one of the most passionate county fan spaces in the whole country. The last couple of years, they've lost that. Tyrone, there seems to be a wee bit of a disconnect between throne and their fan base at the moment, and it's something reflected in the county and discussed, and that's something else they need to get back, because throne and their pomp, their fans were just crazy, you know, they're absolutely crazy, and that carried them a long way too. So you know, maybe I keep going back to that word fresh, like, but maybe it might be the best thing for them.
We shall see who becomes the next Tyrone manager. Unfortunately, their stint is done. They've ran out of road and we've ran out of road here. Noel McCoy, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we didn't get to pick your brain on the disappointing news for Charlie Smith not getting a deal with the New Orleans Saints, and similarly, Lewis Reed-Sammet as well, missing out on an NFL career. At the moment, anyway, who knows what the future holds. Ruby, that's all we have time for. Who is up next? Dermot O'Brien.
The new music show at 7.
The new music show, as always. I get too excited because Dermot O'Brien.
I never capture a waste of puns or anything like that.
It's all right. We'll cast no shadow. Anyway, Dermot O'Brien will be rolling with it with the new music show coming up at 7 o'clock. We're taking a quick ad break. Checking in with the news desk. K-Mon is back. I'll chat to you tomorrow at 6 o'clock. RTE 2FM.